doing that, I was face to face with it. It was holding me by my throat, and it felt like it was sucking something out of me.
I probably should have been more scared than I was when I witnessed the exorcism.
I turned and looked on my right side. When I did, there's a beam on the side of the tree, a large beam. It's looking at me, and I'm looking at it.
After I hit the lock button and looked back up, I saw red eyes staring back at me.
That they're going to show multiple gods all over the earth, be able to speak in people's languages, and at that point, it kind of converge into this one entity, which will be revealed as extraterrestrial. You'll realize that aliens are the gods of old, and at that point, it'll wipe religion out of the context of humanity.
No way, it couldn't have been a person, I know that. I know that people can't run through the woods like that.
So this thing comes into view, and I see it. It's 50 yards away from me. It's walking on two legs. It's huge. This is a big, hairy looking being.
Welcome. I'm your host, and this is Uncomfortable.
Welcome back to the show, my friends. I am your host, Eric Szilagyi. If you've had an uncomfortable experience and you'd like to have it shared here on the show, please get a hold of me at contact.uncomfortable@gmail.com. The world wants to hear your experience. It wants to hear your story. So please reach out to me and let's get yours on the next episode of Uncomfortable. If you haven't yet, make sure to like us on Facebook and Instagram, both at Uncomfortable Podcast 65. And when you do, please make sure to leave us a 5-star rating and review. That alone is the one most single important thing that you can do to help get this show into the algorithm and out in front of more people. With more people listening, that means more great stories coming your way. Uncomfortable Linktree is now operational and the single best place that you can find anything and everything uncomfortable in one spot. All my uncomfortable episodes, links to the YouTube channel, links to the Penford Media documentary series, and links to the other podcasts that I have had the pleasure of being a guest on. And that address is Linktree, linktr.ee/uncomfortable1, and it's spelled like the logo, with the lowercase u and the uppercase n. That is also probably the easiest way for you guys to find the Eventbrite link for tickets to this year's Bigfoot and Brews and Spirits 2. Don't forget to check out the combo ticket for the day of event, September 14th, and the VIP dinner the night before. The combo ticket is a discounted price from the regular price of the tickets individually, and that still includes your dinner and one drink at the brewery. So check that out. Links to our Patreon, YouTube, Bigfoot and Brews and Spirits 2, and all things Uncomfortable will be found in the link tree. That will be listed in the show notes for you. Now for tonight's guest. He's been engaged with the topic of Bigfoot for the better part of 50 years, and he is one of the few that have managed to remain relevant without resting on the same old standard tropes so many do. He's back for the second time on Uncomfortable, and we're going to dive into his newest book and the forward thinking that sets this gentleman apart from others. If you're ready, let's get into it. Please give a warm, uncomfortable welcome to Mr. Ron Moorhead. Ron, welcome to Uncomfortable.
Well, thank you, Eric. I'm so happy to be with you tonight.
I'm glad to have you back, sir. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for the nice introduction.
I'm going to gush on you a little bit because I'll be turning 59 in June, and I've never fancied myself somebody who has a bucket list. I've just never been that guy who's had a list of things that, oh my God, I got to do this before I die. Until I met you, I did not realize that I had a bucket list that you were a part of. And having met you for the first time at West Branch Bigfoot Days, Bigfoot Discovery Days, 4 years ago, I think it was, maybe 5 years now, 4 years, I think. I can remember you getting done with the first part of your presentation. And you went down, you sat down at your table, you had some books in front of you, and I wanted to come over and talk to you, and I just couldn't bring myself to it because I was like, oh, you know, he just got done with his presentation. I don't want to bother him. And my son looked at me and he's like, if you don't do it, you're going to kick yourself in the ass for not doing it. So I went over there and I really didn't want to be a bother. But man, you were just the nicest guy. And I really appreciate the time you took with me and my son. And it was just a pleasure. And I got the pleasure of having you be the speaker at my first Bigfoot and Brews. 2 years ago now. Well, it'll be 3 years in September. You did a fantastic job there. Everybody raved about you. And I wasn't the only one saying nice things about what kind of guy you are. You're a stand up individual and very, very pleasant to be around.
Well, it's humbling. Thank you. Yeah. I'm very humbled.
Well, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there, but I felt it. If anybody listening, anybody has a chance and they want to get out to a Bigfoot conference and they see the name Ron Moorhead on the docket, on the ticket for the day, I highly recommend going and seeing it because it is so much more than just the Sierra sounds. I think that those have been so popular and so such a staple in this topic that sometimes it seems like maybe it overshadows the depth of your involvement with this topic. If they don't read your books, if they don't dig into some of the interviews that you've done and some of the documentaries that you've appeared in, a lot of people know you as the Sierra Sound guy, but there's so much more to it. And it's really very impressive.
Absolutely. There's a lot more to it. I think the Bigfoot thing is what got me into what's really going on. You know, it kind of gets people's attention and then I can talk what I really think needs to be said, which is why my second book, Quantum Bigfoot, because there's so many anomalies have been associated with these things that people got to understand how things work throughout the universe. That's through quantum physics, not just Newtonian physics. You know, we're all in a three-dimensional environment, but we just that's all there is. That's not all there is. I mean, there's so much more. That's how a lot of things work that we don't see. And we only see within certain frequencies. Everything's energy, frequency, and vibration. Yeah. And our sound is frequency. Our energy is, everything's frequency. And our voices are frequency. We only speak within 430 and 770 terahertz. That's our frequency waves.
Yeah, our bandwidth. Not very wide.
Good word. But there's so much more to go. There's so much more out there. There's more dimensions. There's more things to talk about. There's more densities, and all those things are answered a lot by the mathematics and quantum physics. And that's what got me into it. Al Berry, you might have known if you read my first book or my second book, Quantum Bigfoot. He was the guy who said, always stay with science when you talk about this stuff, because the strange stuff, people aren't going to believe, so don't even talk about it. Of course, he had a master's degree in science.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I don't mean to interrupt you. Keep that thought, but that advice that he gave you, there are other very recognizable names when you start talking about this topic, and this isn't throwing shade at any of them, but they firmly stay rooted in the science of what they're willing to talk about. And two in particular, I've had the opportunity to have a private conversation with, and even tried to get them to open up about the more metaphysical, more entangled parts of this topic. And surprisingly, both of these names admitted to there being something else, but beyond that would not stray from the hard science that they know of, which is basically the footprints and the anecdotal sightings and reports.
Yeah, I probably know who you're talking about too.
I'm sure you do. And like I said, you know, I'm not throwing any shade at them. I understand the need for somebody to position themselves steadily against something that can't be argued. And I get that.
Yeah.
But that has been the mainstay of this topic for so long, and it's stagnated. It really has. And there's a culture in the Bigfoot community that you either buy into the woo or you don't. And there is a very divisive division between those two groups. And I don't think you can afford to throw that stuff out, because there are so many reports, so many experiences that these people are having where these things come up.
That's what I try to do in my programs. Every time I speak at a convention, I try to bridge that gap between Newtonian physics and quantum physics, because we're all trained within those parameters. We're all conditioned in our head to believe certain things. And the woo or the paranormal, all that stuff, that's not quantum physics. Quantum physics, a lot of it answers those questions that people have thrown at me for years and years. What about how the track weights disappear? I saw one disappear. How's that happen? Well, can that happen? Yeah, there's a science behind how that happens. And I can get into all that stuff, because those who don't look into how all things really, really work on this planet and in your life, all the way from minute atom all the way through the cosmos, Dr. Christopher Breyer, West Texas A&M physicist, says that. And physicists will all agree to that. You know, things work off the shoulders of Newtonian physics, which is based on everything you can see or feel or touch, our five senses, basically.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps us tied into that those parameters. And the academia who would just want to stay with hard evidence like that, they're not using all the tools they got. I mean, they're probably using all the tools they've been trained to use. And that's all they can do, or they'll lose their tenure, they lose their credibility with their tenure, with their academia colleagues. And
right, and they'll potentially lose the following that they've gained.
Right. But they're all got to change. I mean, because it's coming. It's a fact that all these things exist. And I think there's awareness coming to the general population. That's why things like what we talk about are so very, very popular anymore, because they just got to understand there's more out there that you don't see with your eyes, that you can't really duplicate with the classical science. And you get into quantum physics and you find out that there's just things going on that you got to get your head around. And how far is it to the end of the universe? If everything's measurable, because classical science is based on everything measurable, predictable, material, and physical, and really, it's not. I mean, that's classical science. Yeah, that's our three-dimensional environment. But when you find out there's more dimensions out there, more things going on, and when you die, people think, well, I'm going to go to heaven, maybe. Well, where's that if it's not another dimension?
You know? Right.
Because even...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, even Tesla said what one man calls God, another one calls the science and quantum science. So yeah, they're synonymous as far as I'm concerned. Because once you get into it, but don't call it a woo. To me, I used to be called a woo-wooer, but then I realized that's kind of a compliment, because I'm not a woo-wooer, though. In a way, I'm a citizen scientist who have looked into how things really work through quantum science.
Right.
And
there's a statement from Dr. Planck, Nobel Prize winner, 1918, mm-hmm. and it sums up for me the gist of what we're just talked about as far as the people that lean on the science, and that is, science changes one funeral at a time.
Right.
And that is so very true.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a shame. I mean, these other individuals that I'm talking about, they've done a lot as far as progressing the interest of people in the topic of Bigfoot.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
But I don't know that they can, I don't know that you can say the same for the interest in trying to research the components of what make these things up, where they're from, how they do what they do, why they do what they do. Mm-hmm. And that's what really strikes me about you is you've dug your heels in, and that's where you thrive. That's where you make it. You, to me, make a huge difference in that, in this topic, because you're entertaining those aspects of the stories, the encounters.
It's been my passion. You got to find out, you know, every issue, every problem has an answer. Otherwise it wouldn't be a problem. It's all, everything has an answer, everything. So how could they possibly disappear when so many people say they saw them disappear? How come trackways can just stop? I've had it happen to me. And you just kind of put that up on the shelf till you can figure it out or something. Cause yeah. I've had so many people reports, even Fred Beck in Mount St. Helens in 1924, I think it was, he claimed prior to him shooting one, supposedly, he said that he followed a trackway one time and it stopped. And he said the thing would have had to jump 160 feet to have not left another track. Well, the guy is credible. The whole report was credible. I mean, he couldn't find the body that was shot one, though. But still, it's considered credible. And yeah. If that's credible, then all the other reports I've heard, well, the trackways just stopped. Well, a regular researcher said, well, a helicopter must have come in and picked him up, right? Didn't happen.
Well, you know, I know some researchers say, well, duh, look up, you know, and I understand that, you know, the possibility of these things going arboreal and leaving the ground and getting into a tree. I 100% get that. Sure. But when you have footprints that stop in the middle of an open field, mm-hmm. or, you know, and there's nowhere for it to transverse to, then there's still a problem. There's still an issue with that.
Well, you want me to explain that a little bit?
I would like to. I want to preface before you start saying that. I want to say that it's been my opinion for a number of years now, going back to something that you said, that our visual acuity has a bandwidth that's very narrow compared to what all is out there that's perceivable by other electronics and stuff like that. Our hearing has a very small bandwidth compared to the lower frequencies and the higher frequencies that we can't hear. And vibration is absolutely 100%, 1000% a part of every single thing that is around us and in us. Mm-hmm. Everything is vibrating at a frequency. So, I mean, those things that when you bring those up, those are all very tangible things to me. I don't see why it's hard to wrap your head around it. Like, so please get into it and let's convince some people here.
All right, here you go. Energy and matter are interchangeable. That was discovered by Einstein, but affirmed by Dr. Paul Dirac at 1933. He got the Nobel Prize for the exchange between matter and energy, energy and matter. So, but you can't see energy. You can see matter. That was affirmed by Hadron Collider in Switzerland in 2012 when that collider, the particle hit turned into energy. They can detect energy. And some people can see some energy too. It's like a cat can see more than we can, but has a better bandwidth than we do. So therefore, energy and matter are interchangeable. Now, I've been around these creatures called Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever you call it, a lot. And they have a vocal mechanism that's so expansive, more so than ours. I mean, much more so. We don't know how high and how far it goes or how low it goes. I believe they can go to infrasound and ultrasound like you were talking about, but we don't hear that. We can feel it. I've mm-hmm. had the feeling sensation before when I was getting close to one. But if they can create a frequency, which is energy, frequency, vibration, it's energy vibrating at a frequency. And Einstein says you find the frequency of anything, you can change its matter. Well, that's a big one to get to. I think that's how miracles were done. You know, they find the frequency of something, you can change the matter. Well, if these things have learned or been given the attribute to change their matter into energy, they would disappear. You might see them cloaking through the fourth dimension of time, or you might see the trackways stop. The trackways would stop because their density wouldn't be there anymore, and they wouldn't leave a track. So there's my answer to that. It just makes sense to me because it's been established that those two issues are interchangeable. And I think that's the key right there.
So on that point, do you think that they are continuing to remain in our plane of existence? They're just changing their matter into energy and continuing on? Or do you think that they're traversing a different, for lack of better words, traversing a different dimension? Mm-hmm. Do you think that they're leaving our reality? I hate to use reality because that makes it.
I know what you're saying. Let me back this up just a second. I don't think they're all the same. I believe in aliens. They've been here and they have messed with the genome of different species. I believe that a gorilla or a troglodyte or some type has been messed with to create these things. And they've been here before Homo sapiens, some of them. And some of them have got these attributes that others don't have because different aliens have been on this planet and messed with the genome of different species.
Right.
That's just what I believe. So that being said, some of them have different attributes than others. Some of them I do believe can dissipate or out of our visual range and go into another dimension. And if so, they would be looking like a cloaked. Some of them may not do that. I don't know. I really don't know. I have my suspicions that they go out of our dimension because I think they've been created by all of them have been created by something other than Darwinism, evolution. That's what I think. And actually, I'm very raised religiously, and I know scriptures fairly well. And first thing I started looking into when I ran across these things, I was looking for the ape in the woods. These things are apes out there somewhere. Somewhere they got loose, you know, and started multiplying. But I wanted to find out where giants came from because they're huge. I mean, these things are huge. And so I started looking in the Bible, you know, got into the scriptures and the Nephilim in the Bible and all that stuff. But then I had to go a little bit further because that wouldn't give me all the answers. The book of Enoch gave me more. Then I had to keep digging. I go all the way back to the Mesopotamia where the cuneiform texts are from the Anunnaki. You get into that, and that's most all written languages have a core from that written language, which is the very first known to man. And you start researching that and looking into that, you find out that a lot of things happen between Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. I mean, we're talking about thousands of years here, not just a day or two, you know. Right. So anyway, you start looking at that, you realize how every leader, every king, every president, whoever was in charge of the group, would alter the text to agree with whatever they wanted for power, you know.
Right.
Like Constantine, he went into 325. He only allowed four books from all those books that were out there, which Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, to be canonized, to be part of what the people could agree to. You got to agree to that or you're in trouble. So with that said, they're not all the same. Do they go into another dimension? I think some of them from eons past have crossed bred with indigenous people. And there's a lot of native lore that says that they used to take their women. And
indeed, yeah.
And that means some of them have diluted down. That means they'd have to also 23 pair of chromosomes, which have 24, you know. And if that's the case, some of them would be more human-like, like the Patterson film, the track I've got there from Bob Gimlin. Looks very much very human-like. It's got the arch, it's got a lot of things in it.
Right back there.
There you are, yeah. But the ones I got are a little more splayed, and it's hard to tell a right from a left because they walk one foot in front of the other. Yeah. And I think some of them have been diluted down. They may have lost some of their original attributes because they've become more like us, which we lost ours, you know. We have Absolutely. So much more. We've had so much more as humans than we have not evolved into yet, if we ever do. But you do that through your consciousness a lot. to becoming enlightened.
I think you're right. I think there is a method that we can return to something maybe a little closer to what we used to be. But I think as a whole, humanity on this planet, rather than evolving, I think we have been in the process of devolving. And the reason I say that is because, you know, and I've said this a bunch of times, if we were out on the plains and we were sleeping around a fire and all we had to cover up with was a loincloth or a piece of skin from our last kill, and we're sleeping at the fire, but we've got one eye open because we're trying to keep an ear and an eye out for whatever the predator is that's within the wood line, so they don't come in and take off with our young or take off with our females or take off with our elderly. You know, when people talk about having a sixth sense, or, you know, knowing something's wrong when they're in a position, you know, put in a position, then they can tell something's wrong, but they don't know what it is. I think that's a throwback to, we used to have that and we used to use those things a lot, but with being in a house with a roof and with doors that you can lock and with windows that you can lock, we don't have to rely on those anymore. So through generations of civilization, I think those things have been dumbed down and virtually lost to us. We probably still have the ability to do it, but it's not practiced. It's not used. We don't need to. So, you know, them out in the woods and living wild, it only makes sense that they still have those senses about them, and possibly because of DNA alteration, even more than what we could comprehend.
Yeah, I think have these same abilities that you're just mentioning that's been digressed in us. I think we do have the ability to grow into back what we're originally meant to be. And I think we started being dumbed down right after the last Younger Dryas here, you know, 12,000 years ago or so. And we just had to start growing again because we lost our whole Earth lost its vibration, you know, went down to third dimension at that time when land split and all that. We have to learn how to meditate and to get back into what we're intended to be, because we can reach to what we're supposed to be all the way in this lifetime. It's just, we have to learn that we only live in three dimensions, and yet you can, I should say three densities, that's a better word, but you can go into the fifth and sixth. I think we're all headed for the fifth and sixth dimension now with this enlightenment that we're going through. But cleaning up your pineal gland is very important. It has a direct relationship to the heart, which the heart is your brain, really. That's more important than this one up here, pretty much. If you're in coherence, your heart is in coherence with this outside conditioned brain, it will uncondition, it will allow it to expand, because you got to listen to this. But sometimes your analytical mind will tell you to go over there when your heart says go over here. And you got to learn to listen to that core. But to do that, I think meditation, that's what the chakras are about, balancing your chakras and getting those all in rhythm with each other so that your brain is paying attention to your heart and not being talked out of something. You know, sometimes you'll think about something, now that had to be a bear.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I didn't know until fairly recently, within the last couple of years, that within the human heart, there is a section that is made up of, and I don't remember the number, it's either 40,000 or 400,000 brain cells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right on the 40.
You know, right, literally within our heart. So,
yeah.
What a strange. Why would that be that way?
So we can do what we're supposed to do on this planet.
Yes.
Yeah. In my opinion,
it's interesting that you bring that up. But that's a.
I got a diagram of that, and I drew a diagram for that in my new book.
Did you really?
Yeah, through meditation, you just have to learn to be still and let that pineal gland get decalcified, which that's the receiver. I think that is the thing that can reach into the source, I got to call it the source because we don't know what it is, but it's a universal consciousness. That universal consciousness wants us to be right, wants us to get back to where we're supposed to be. We're very important as human beings. And I think there's a lot of things depending on us to get through this and get back to where we're supposed to be. And I think we're supposed to get into really what the Anunnaki were. And they were the ones that were here on Earth, writing the giving the cuneiform text to the Sumerians. They weren't supposed to interfere, but they did. They were giants. They called the shiny ones, the powerful ones. Those names are all Elohim. They always talked about gods. Elohim was mentioned hundreds, if not thousands of times in those cuneiform texts that they've discovered. It's always been in the plural form. Well, that's going to throw you for a loop. That throws you for a loop a little bit because we've all been taught there's one God up there herding sheep and he's going to get you, you know. Well, that's not the way I see it anymore. God made man in his image. A lot of people say, well, that's the Father, Son, the Holy Ghost. Well, yeah, it probably was. But there's more to it than that. There's more to it. And I think they did a lot of manipulation with different species on this planet. There's a whole hybridization program on board now. And anyway, it goes on and on and on. It's a lot of fun when you start looking into it. It's very, very interesting stuff.
I'm going to ask you this, and I think maybe I already know the answer, but judging from how you speak about it, you were born and raised religious. You went back to the books of the Bible and then you had to go beyond that and go find the books that had been omitted from regular use with the Bible. Do you find that when you start looking into this stuff that conventional religion really, really breaks down at that level?
Yeah, in my opinion, it's all about control. There's a lot of good people in religion, don't get me wrong, but I've also been around it all my life and I'm not religious now, but I'm spiritual like we all are. And I think if Einstein could have said it today, like he said it years ago, he said, science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. That's Einstein said that, but he could say it today. I don't think he'd use the word religion. I think he'd use the word spirituality.
Spirituality, yeah.
Yeah, because we're all spirit beings. We're all energy at the most minute source, which cannot die. You think about that one, that just falls right into religions. You know, if it can't die, it's got to go somewhere. And it only changes form, but it can't die. So that got me into multiple embodiments, really. I don't think you can learn everything you got to learn in this one lifetime. And that goes against a lot of religions, but a lot of religions believe in that too. A lot of people believe in the reincarnation because you're here to experience. That's what we're here all about, is to experience life and to see, not just to experience it, but respond to things properly. And so many of us want to be a victim, and so many of us want to think, well, if it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have any luck at all, you know, on that path like that. But if you think positively and to think and treat everything with love and compassion and be honorable with other people and be an honorable person and think positively, watch positive things and just get off this petty path that so many people are on, you know, watching soap operas.
That goes back to you and I before we started recording. You know, I asked you how you've been and you told me you're great, you know, and you went on to say, you know, you're having a wonderful life. It struck me at that point that you don't hear many people say that. There's always the, I don't have, I wish I could, you know, I should have been able to, and be happy with who you are, what you are, what you have.
Yes. And be happy that you got these confrontations coming up in front of you so you can respond to them, because that's what you're supposed to have. You're supposed to have problems and stuff like that so you can respond to them, because that's how you grow. That's how you grow. Exactly. I told my grandson, he's playing football, you know, oh, we lost. I said, no, there's no such thing as losing. You either won or you learned something. So we're here to learn and to respond properly. And I think that's really the Bigfoot thing got me into talking like this, you know, because I didn't used to, just talk about the sounds that we recorded and what went on at camp, all the anomalies that happened and all that. But I'm happy that I get on programs like yours and I'm able to say what I think needs to be said. At my age, I don't care to pull anybody's strings, or I don't care about ego or nothing like that. Right. Just hopefully it helps somebody, and what I got is helpful. Yeah.
Well, I agree with you. And like I said earlier, you know, standing on science is fine. But when there is somebody that wants to delve into the other parts of these things, the other topics that are involved with this, don't poo-poo it. You know, there's a space for it. There is room for everything.
You know, the thing is, quantum science is a science. It's only a little over 100 years old. Like you mentioned, Max Planck a while ago got the Nobel Prize in 1918. And that's when, prior to that, that's when Einstein, Schrodinger, all these different physicists started working on the new sciences out there. But if you're not a physicist, you don't know about all that. You know, even the classical scientists have been trained in certain little fields there. That's all they're going to stay in. That's what they're trained in. That's what they want to answer to. And they don't want to get out of that box. But I think it's time. Their time is coming. They've got to admit that more is going on than what they've been trained to study. And that's just what I think.
You know, Tesla, again, this is like, if you look up Ron's new book, Bigfoot Unveiled, if you look at the very first paragraph as far as description, the very first thing that you're going to read is, the day science begins to study non-physical phenomenon, it will make more progress in one decade than in all the previous centuries of its existence. And that was written by Nikola Tesla. And it's so true.
And even Edgar Mitchell said that without, you know, what did he say? Something like,
it takes classical and quantum sciences together
for
clear perception.
Right. That's it. You hit right on the nose. Yeah. You have to have both of them. And that's what I go by in my studies and what I'm looking at. You have to have both those elements together, because we can't deny what we're seeing, what we're sitting at a table, we're living. You can't deny that. I mean, it's obvious we are, unless it's a big hologram, like some people say, like it probably is, but I don't get into that.
I hope not. I hope it's not. I hope there's something more, I hope there's some more validity to our existence than just being a simulation. That would be very, very disappointing to me, but.
Well, there's more going on than what we see, know, or feel. And I think if we're in a very special time on this planet, I think we're fixed to see some major, major events unfold probably between now and, they say, 2027.
Yeah.
And that's what things are seem to be leading to.
It does seem to be leading to something, doesn't it?
Well, you know, finally the government says UFOs are real. You know, finally they admit that Roswell wasn't a weather balloon after all, right? Mm-hmm. And you got all these things that, and just stuff is being opened and exposed more. You got more of these people coming out of woodwork, whistleblowers, they call them, and talking about what they encountered at different places with UFOs, aliens, what have you. And you're going to have more and more people seeing these Bigfoot creatures, even Dogman down in Tennessee, where I just came from, Georgia. They've seen those Dogmen down there in those big parks. And you see all these genetic mutations, no, it wasn't mutation, just things that have been genetically modified. And Skinwalker Ranch is another example, you know, something like that.
Have you ever been there?
No, I've flown over a time or two in my plane, but I've never gotten there. I got invited there one time, but I didn't go. Had something else happening. That was a long time ago. But I think, you know, I started watching that program for the first time or two because I had an interest there.
Yeah.
But I stopped watching it because they're just one step behind the music here. You know, they got to get into quantum science to understand what's really going on. I know they're smart guys, but it's just a production. And I've been on these production things before. You know how they go. They want the narrative that they want, and they'll film you for a week to take 3 minutes out of what you said to make up what they make sure it fits with their narrative. You know, it just that's the way it is. So until I can say what I want to say on those things and have it not edited out, you know, well, anyway, I think, anyway, you think what you think. You just want to say because you believe it to be true, you know.
You know, and it's really disingenuous on their part, you know.
Well, it's business. It's just business. They know the demographic they're after. They know what the majority of this demographic wants this, and that's what they're going to shoot for, and that's what they're going to pay for. And if they don't get that, the production company hasn't done their job. So the production company's job is to give them what they want, and that what they want is what the demographic says they need. And it's rare that you see anything really 100% genuine coming out of those things. I'll say this, though. The Alaska Killer Bigfoot that I was on with the Discovery Channel here a couple of years ago, those guys are genuine, and they do have something up there in Portlock, Alaska, something going on.
Hey, all my uncomfortable friends. You've heard me talking about the Eufy Video Lock for some time now, and I got to tell you, this thing is a game changer. Smart lock, security camera, and doorbell all in one unit, and all it took was a Phillips screwdriver to install it. The Eufy Video Lock, that's EUFY Video Lock, allows for unlocking the door three different ways: through fingerprint technology, passcode entry, or physical keys. The crystal clear 2K video is instantly accessible with no monitoring or monthly subscription needed. It even has two-way audio when you use the free Wi-Fi driven iOS or Android compatible Eufy Video Lock app. I have a brick home, and there was no way I was going to drill through the brick and hardwire any of the other options out there just for the sake of having a video doorbell. But with the Eufy Video Lock, simply replacing the deadbolt on your front door and operating on a rechargeable battery that lasts up to 4 months, that was the perfect choice for me. With the Eufy Video Lock, you get an incredible 18-month warranty and 24/7 customer service. Search Eufy Video Lock, that's EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to take complete control of your entry doors now.
And
that came out, was that around the pandemic?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I've expected another season of that.
Everybody is. They're looking for their funding, I think. Because the production company that did it would do another one. In fact, they asked me if I would go up if they got the funding, and I said yes. I'm only in 2 episodes of that, so I'm not real sure.
I was watching that show, and I enjoyed it. There was some production value to it, but my overall feeling of it was that it was a pretty genuine representation of what those guys were experiencing up there. And I forget what episode it was, but all of a sudden this helicopter comes flying in, and I was like, oh, all right, what do we got here? And the door opens up and you step out, and I was like, all right, here we go. Now now it's getting good.
I gotta tell you, that was a lot of fun too. Yeah.
Oh, I bet.
It was cold at night, so I gotta tell you, it's cold.
How long were you there?
Oh, it was just a couple of days.
Yeah.
They flew me into Anchorage, huh?
Can you talk about any of the experiences you had there that we might not have been privy to from watching the show episodes?
Well, that's why they want to do a second season, I think, is to get more going on. But something did happen when they blasted my sounds, which I told them they may not want to do that, but they wanted something to happen. But they had a guy there with a big gun, a lot of camera crews, and there's 3 camera guys. And had something that came out of the woods at that time, I pretty much guarantee you, so he got shot. That's probably what was happening in the 40s and 50s when they got mangled up there, so many people did in that village. Because I think if something 10, 12 foot tall screamed at them because they were clear cutting the wood too much. Because that's what they were doing years ago. I can see the new growth up over there. When I flew into the helicopter, I looked it over, circled it a few times, and I could see that. And I also see from pictures I saw, they had fishing was tremendous there. That's what the Ayers wanted to do, is open up the fishing village again. But no one's been there since then. Since the thing was abandoned, no one been there to rehabituate it.
And so I know the whole story behind it. And but like when you decided to get involved with that production, I would imagine you being a man of intelligence, you probably looked into the story before you decided to throw your hat in. Is there a significant amount of evidence to suggest that claim that Bigfoot ran everybody out and did do the things that they said they did? Well, is that factual?
Yeah, it's all the newspapers from back then. It's recorded. And I think they lost over 30 people. Got mangled. It wasn't a bear. It was a Bigfoot-like creature. They call it something else. It's got a name for it, but it was real. And yeah, I looked into it. It's authentic. Something's still going on there too. But I think they were encroaching on its area too much and screwing up the whole area really with logging and what have you, fishing.
Yeah.
And I think it probably just was more than what these things wanted. And they come out, screamed at them. They got shot at, I think. And no one's there to really tell you exactly what took place. You know, you have to kind of surmise it all from looking over and thinking. But then some of them are just actually aggressive anyway. You know, it depends on what made them. Getting back to what alien made them, for what benefit or what reason, what agendas they have. Because there's some malicious, there's some not malicious, and I think, you know, poor luck may just been one of those, but they said, what do we do? Well, that didn't put any pressure on me at all, does it? I'm supposed to tell them what to do. I said, well, the best thing to do is come back here without the camera crew, just three or four of you, and just stay here. And if you don't come back here, well, I know not to come back.
Good advice, Ron. Good advice. It's
but just respect the land. I don't think that's a problem with a lot of people in the United States are clear cutting. Oregon, Washington, they clear cut. And so many reports are of these Bigfoot things being seen around where they're clear cutting. And when you're out there bucking logs yourself on your own property, I've had reports, you know, I was just cutting up my logs for my house or something. And, you know, they really got a thing about trees. And I got a whole chapter on that in my new book. Because trees are important to these things. And when you go clear cutting, in fact, Peter Byrne, who just passed away recently, he just had interviewed 8 loggers that were clear cutting. None of them, all skeptical, never thought he knew them. They said they saw one coming down the logging road at them. And they were all believers after that. That's significant coming from Peter Byrne, because he's very skeptical about these things being anything other than just flesh and blood, which most people believe they are just flesh and blood, you know, some kind of ape out there that's evolved that Darwin didn't get a hold of or something. But nothing, in my opinion, is flesh and blood only. What gives us our consciousness? What gives us our intuitiveness? What gives us our telekinesis? Some people can do that. You know, what gives us these abilities that some people show? We have more than just a regular ape. There's more to us than just an ape. And most anybody would agree with that, I think. But then what is it that makes us more? And if these things are part human, and I'm sure they are, and I've established that in my new book, because you got Dr. Curlin, who said they have a sound range that's beyond ours, in ours and below ours, all over the box, and represented an 8-foot, one little section represented a entity over 8 foot tall compared to the human vocal mechanism. Then you got Scott Nelson, the cryptolinguist, who said that's a language. He listened to him and studied him. He said, that's a language by the human definition of language. Means a morphine stream, like I'm talking to you now, like we talk. No other animal on the face of this planet is supposed to have that ability except humans. Yet these things have it.
Yeah.
That's according to Dr. Philip Lieberman at Brown University. So if they have that component, and they do, the ones we interacted with does, they got, they're part human. Bottom line, they have to be. And
well, I thought it was really interesting. I watched a talk that Scott had done. It was long. It was long. He got carried away. But it was very interesting. And some of the takeaways for me was when he was describing the morphine stream of these individuals that you guys recorded, he was able to pinpoint and recognize termination at the end of a sentence. He was able to isolate exclamation mm-hmm. on certain words, or I want to call them words, but to us, they're more sounds. But there are very, very specific components to language that we use on a daily basis in this conversation that we're having right now. And if we got into an argument, we started screaming at each other, there would be more that would be akin to what you guys had recorded. And it is so unusual that, and I can't tell you how many times I've gone back and listened to those recordings. And there is such an unusual component when you listen to it. It's the same feeling I get when I hear two people speaking in a language that I just don't understand, whether it be Russian or whether it be Vietnamese or whether it be, you know, any other foreign language. There is something very intelligent going on there. And it's not like cavemen grunting and groaning at each other. There's like communication. There is legitimate communication going on around you guys when you recorded that. And it's a fascinating thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You could hear them stepping on each other too. And some people say, well, I can make those sounds. Well, no, they can't make those sounds. Not to the frequency that we were getting. Who was it? Thinker Thunker, I think, he's not a professional, but he did a pretty good analysis. He said there was 5 octaves in one tone, and humans can't do that. So, and also the proof is out there, that program there, they did an mm-hmm. element on the Sierra sounds and accredited them as being genuine. And they are genuine, you know. I mean,
yeah.
I was there, and no one's messing with us up there. I mean, not any human anyway, not like we see humans.
Was there ever a time up there where you guys, or you in particular, like truly felt at risk? Was there ever a point where, I understand the fear of not knowing or not understanding what you're experiencing, but were you ever in a position, or any of your guys up there in a position, where they were absolutely terrified for their life? Was there any kind of aggressive behavior?
When it first started, there was. I wasn't there on the first go around, but that's how I got involved. Actually, one of the guys left, he could go back. He said, and the guys were late coming out, and the wife said, well, we got to find out what ate them, or if anybody ate them, or if they've been killed, or what's going on, because they didn't know what they're dealing with. Bigfoot was not on the radar at all. They just thought there was some kind of monster up there. And so Donald said, I won't go back, but I was friends with them all, but I wasn't a hunter at the time, so I wasn't part of the hunting group. And that's all that was up there, was a hunter. So I went back with him, and that's how I got involved. I saw the tracks. I heard the sounds they recorded. They were all okay, but they were so afraid the first few nights up there, a couple nights, that Donald wouldn't stay another night. He shot out, said, I'll left him a note. Well, it is pretty frightening when you listen to the sounds. But when I started going up there, I realized, well, these guys hadn't been hurt yet. They haven't been eaten, and nothing's happened. So I didn't have the fear factor, I don't think, that they probably had the first time or two that it happened with them up there. And that was 1971. And it just it kind of got me bold about them, because I was 29 then, and I didn't think anything could hurt me anyway. You know, just yeah. one of those guys. Just nothing's going to bother me. And so, really, when it come to my interacting with them 101 in 1974, 3 years later, I wasn't afraid. We were outside the shelter then, and that's usually they wouldn't interact with us while we're outside the shelter, but they did then. That's when they slowed down, according to cryptolinguists, they slowed down their vocalizations to try to communicate something with me that I could understand. Me, still not knowing what we're dealing with, but just having fun with it in a way, in a strange way, started mimicking them. And yet they were trying to say something to me, and I don't know to this day what they were trying to say. A lot of people say, well, we're listening, of course, we know exactly what they're saying to you. Well, they all tell me something different. So how do you really know who's telling the truth? You know? And you don't know where to put your weight there. But right. They were interacting with us. They weren't trying to. You could tell there's an infection of a statement coming out as a question, inferring a question to me. And I tried to mimic them back. I got all this on recording, too. That's the core of my second CD that I presented. By the way, all these are downloadable on my website, books and the CDs. And so I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, while you're talking about it, tell them what your website is and how they can get that, because you were kind enough to share those with me a couple of years ago when we did our first episode. And
sure.
I can't tell you how many times I've gone back and listened to that. It's just, here's the interesting thing. When I play it, my dog wants nothing to do with it.
Right.
He'll leave the room. He will go and he will come into like my studio area where the sound, he's not getting the sound anymore. Mm-hmm. I took him, I went, this was a few Christmases ago. I got invited to some friend's house and somebody was asking me about doing the show and do I really think Bigfoot exists? And I said, yeah, I really do think that it's a real tangible thing. It is out there. And they're like, so what kind of proof? Show me some kind of proof. And I played your sounds for them. And they had just gotten a new black lab. And he was only a couple of months old and he would not go into his crate to save his life. He wanted nothing to do with being in that crate. Uh-huh. And the crate was in the room that we were all having the party in. And I played those sounds. And when I played those sounds, the dog urinated on the floor and he went into his crate and he laid down.
Yeah. My second CD, Eric, has a 911 call on it, if you've heard that. I interviewed this guy. It's on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington where he had this encounter. He saw the thing, he called the police. It was all on recording. When he was talking to the dispatcher, he saw it out in front of his garage through the windows.
Which one you're talking about. Yeah.
That's been plagiarized a lot, but I don't care. You know, it's real. And interesting. But he had his dog killed there, you know, a big German Shepherd. It was thrown 35 feet. We measured it from where it was on the other side of the fence, over the fence, 35 feet, killed it. He had buried. And anyway, if a dog irritates them, they will kill a dog. Or if the dog goes barking after them. But the best thing could happen for the dog owner is if he comes back and cowers down under your legs or something. And that's what generally happens. You know, dogs just won't follow a trail. They won't follow the thing. Because they will get killed if they do. And I discourage people taking dogs, but some people do. And if they go chasing after that thing, they're going to maybe lose a dog.
Yeah. I interviewed a gentleman.
By the way, my website is ronmoorhead.com.
Okay. Yeah. <That's>, before we forget. I'd interviewed a gentleman, it's probably been a little over a year ago, from pretty much middle of lower Michigan. And he's firmly convinced that the one that is on his property and his dog, kind of, this makes it sound silly, but kind of engage in each other. He's come back to the house smelling very, very musky and like he's been around something that doesn't smell good. And it's a small dog, a small breed. And when he takes his dog with him, there is a kind of like a feed store that he frequents. And outside the feed store, they have one of these cement Bigfoot statues like you see at all these home and garden places. And he said when they go to it, that dog, when he'll run up to that statue and his tail starts shaking and he gets all excited.
Huh.
Like he recognizes that as something that he plays with in the woods.
Well, he probably got a good one. Like I say, they're not all the same. So some of them may, well, if they can find the vibration, and they can, I think they can tune in the vibration of anything. That's my opinion. And I think that can also be animals. Our horses didn't jump around when these things were right out there. No, they did when a bear come around, but not when the Bigfoot was around. They didn't. They just stood like frozen.
Interesting.
And I think they can tune into a vibration. That's where a lot of people get what they call mind speak. Because I can tune into you, your vibration, you'll hear that. I never did. People ask me, "Dave, reminds me, I'm too analytical." You know, that's my problem. I have to analyze everything. A conditioned brain, you know, and that's probably why they were trying to tell me something orally. I got to record it because I couldn't get the quantum entanglement, I call it. But yeah, they can quantum entangle a lot of things, I think. Find the energy, find the frequency of anything, you can control its matter.
You know, I've often wondered, as far as frequency goes, you know, with their vocal capabilities, and if they were able to produce a sound wave in a frequency that is something that is completely foreign to us, I wonder if. Because like if you've ever been to a loud concert and been, you know, too close to the speakers, or been around something that is incredibly loud, vibration and frequency can alter the way that we see. It can cause distortion in our vision because of the vibration and all that. And I wonder if, you know, part of the component of their being able to turn into like the predator, where they disappear, they blend in. I had a conversation with a woman, and I've tried forever and a day to get this woman to come on, and she just won't do it. But she insists that when she became aware that they were around her, as she was leaving the area that she was in, and she was getting hit with this wave of, for all intents and purposes, let's call it what a lot of people do by saying that they were getting zapped. When she turned to look back at the area that she was leaving from where she was hunting, she was very familiar with the place. She was very familiar with the land and the surroundings. And when she turned around to look back behind her, there were still trees, there were still leaves, there was still sky. It was still looked like normal, but it did not look like the spot that she was in. She did not recognize what she looked back at as being the place that she was just hunting. And I wonder if their vocal capacity, if they're able to emanate a change of frequency, can they affect how we perceive them more than are they actually cloaking?
Interesting. That's nothing surprises me. Yeah, I think that's, well, I don't know, but that's a pretty good idea there. I mean, because their vocal range is so expansive, it's hard to say what they can and can't do. We'll know one of these days, but we don't know now. But that's interesting. I've heard other people, same thing. I had a guy walking through the forest one time, and all of a sudden all the surroundings were different. And I can tell you this, what did happen to me and Warren Johnson up there one night at our camp. we heard this thing outside, and it was probably 30 feet away from the shelter behind a huge tree, we thought. And we thought, well, let's go out through the door. We'll see it right quick and see it run away because bright moonlit night. And we thought, just we could see this thing run away. We were getting pretty bold then because we realized they weren't going to eat us. They were friendly. And so we both jump out there at the same time, start walking up towards that tree, probably 10, 15 feet apart. And we got up there so many feet before we got to that tree, both got frozen. Like I relate to it as a force field in Star Trek or something, you know, just you couldn't go. I mean, you could not go forward. And he looked at me and I can't go anymore. I said, I can't go anymore either. And so we both just turned around, went back. As soon as we got back in, it started chattering again like it won, you know. I think that might have been infrasound. I explained that to a scientist one time who said, we can't work with your fear. Science doesn't work with fear. By the way, that's another subject, fear. Very important. We understand fear. I said, it wasn't fear. We was not afraid at that time. We just wanted to see one. And he said, well, it had to be infrasound or pheromones. At the time, pheromones only work within the same species, so I thought it has to be infrasound. I still think it's infrasound, but who knows what it was. But now that we do know they have a human component to them, it may have been pheromones, but I don't think so. That's a different story. But fear, let me get on the fear right quick before we have to go. Fear is very important that you control fear. I think that's why I've had so much good luck up there because I haven't been afraid. And I've been concerned a couple of times. I was up there by myself in 2011. That's the last thing I wrote in my Voices of Wilderness book. I had a guy scheduled to go with me, one of the offsprings of Donald, really. And he had to back out the last minute. So Scott Nelson and I had been up there, I think, three times that summer trying to get some more cooperative sounds or something. And I had to know because nothing definitively happened. Things happen, but if it's not definitively, you know, like at a sighting or you see tracks along with the sound or something, has to make it better than just, yeah, I think so. So anyway, I wanted to find out. I went back up by myself, good shape. You know, I could walk in, and I did. Carried just enough protein bars to last me for 3 days. One of those things. And I had an encounter that night. I heard him chattering. That was the last time I heard him chatter. 2011, and heard a big whap, and I thought it was a wood knock at the time, but I kind of think now it might not have been a wood knock. It might have been the energy of one of them materializing out of a tree.
I'm glad you said that.
Well, I think they, you know, even Native and Laura says they energize in trees. They live in two worlds. Well, how does that happen? Well, if they can change their matter into energy, they can go into a tree and just be there, you know. And they have to have energy, I think, to do what they do and to even come out. And I'm not the only one that subscribes to that, but there's other people that have seen them go into trees. And I've seen a video one time of a guy who, he was coming out of the woods and he was filming outside of the car. His son was driving and didn't see it till later, but he had a video of a head sticking out behind a tree like that, looking at him. And just real quick, but you've seen his head go out like that and come back, conical shape. And the tree's only this big around. I mean, you had to have seen more of it. You know, I'm saying that there's something going on with trees and these things. And another reason we don't want to cut trees down. But so many reports about these things when you're cutting trees. What do we do for trees? They give us our life and they give us our air. And we just cut them down, use them for furniture, building a house, or burning. And I think that's got something to do with us messing the planet up. We're messing the planet up. You know, we're a warring species, too. And that makes it kind of bad because we got to change the warring species mentality of the majority of this planet so we can all evolve so the Earth can evolve. And we need to evolve to a higher state of consciousness. And we can do that within ourselves, but we want more people to understand how this works. And it's through consciousness and quantum science, just because we can reach all the way up to the ninth dimension, I think, in this embodiment. But you have to do it through consciousness. You can't do it through the actual body, my opinion. I think we're made to be like the Anunnaki, ninth-dimensional beings, powerful ones.
Well, I don't disagree with you because I think that created in his image or created in their image, I think probably is more accurate.
It is.
I think that they are... I think that, like, ultimately maybe the goal for us as humanity to get to the point where we are as they were.
Yeah, I agree. Yes. But the good ones, there's a good Anunnaki too. You know, they're not all bad. Just the ones that fell, the fallen ones are the ones that are bad, but the good ones are what we're after. That's our conscious. That's where we're going to get to. That's what we're designed to be. And nothing else in this universe is, well, that I know of. We've all been here before, so we probably know a lot more than what we can really bring to our consciousness. But
I want to go back to real quick what you said about when I got excited when you said about the tree. You know, my podcast covers anything in high strangeness, you know, paranormal encounters, haunting, stuff like that. And the thing that is, you know, I try to have this file cabinet in my head of all these things that repeat, you know, the things that I hear either in a haunting or in a Bigfoot, or there's a pattern. There's a thing that repeats and, you know, so many times in the investigation of a haunted location, what do we hear? You hear rapping, you hear knocking on wood, and then you hear people who have encounters out in the woods where they're hearing wood knocks. Well, to my knowledge, I don't think anybody has ever captured a picture of a Bigfoot standing in there with a huge stick hitting a tree.
Right.
And I get pushback on this all the time, and that's fine. I think everybody should have their opinion, and it's okay to disagree. We can still walk away being friends. But I wonder if that knock, that tree knock that everybody is trying to emulate, which isn't easy to do unless you have two very hard pieces of wood to knock together. I wonder if that sound is a component of them coming into our perception.
Mm-hmm. Could be. You know, that night when I recorded them, I got the recordings of the wood knocks. They were knocking. Mm-hmm. But that's not all there is to it, I don't think. You know, they rhythmically clack on rocks too. And they whoop back and forth, different intonations of whooping. That's all on my second CD. However, we learn just to ignore them when that starts happening. Be still, keep doing what you're doing, they come closer. And that's what happened that night. So we're good. They came in the second night doing the same thing.
How close do you think you were at the closest that you guys ever engaged with them? How close do you think that they were?
Oh, probably 15 feet.
Really?
Outside our shelter, yeah. Now that night when they were interacting with me, they were probably 50 yards away.
That's close. That's close.
Well, that's the night I saw one, and that's what, so did Bill, my friend. He saw one that same night too. That's when the samurai cry, I recorded that samurai cry coming down from, I seen it streaking through the woods, and really fast, very smooth. And he was going down to where we think there was an adolescent and a female down below. And I think the adolescent was trying to get too bold. And I think that's what the big male was probably trying to stop. It's just my opinion of how it felt that night. But this went on for over an hour that night, and it was really exciting.
But so I think, lead us into the book. What are you, and I realize that it's an extension of the Quantum Bigfoot, but where does this one differ? Where is it just some extrapolations of your theories from the previous book, or are there some new paths that you're going down there?
There's a few new things. I get into Tesla's manifestation code, the 369, what I think it means, and what I get into, well, like I said, I got into hybridization program. I get into cloaking, how they do that, which we talked about earlier, and just stuff like that. Let me look at my chapters here. Yeah, I get into light and sound, levitation, as above, so below, and also AI, artificial intelligence. I think that's my subchapter on that, or artificial intelligence, is a wolf in sheep's clothing. That's what we're looking at there, I think. Got to be careful with our AI. AI is going to take over the whole planet.
I, you know, there was a time where I was like, ah, it's not going to be that bad. And now the more I see, I now see content creators using Joe Rogan's AI generated voice over a video that he never was a part of, reciting a script that he never spoke. You know, in the fact that they can do that now, I mean, there was just something on the national news that phone scammers are using AI, and because of all the information that's out there and all the stuff that's been recorded by our phones that we carry with us every day, that have already been proven that they listen in on what we're doing, or saying, that scammers are able to use AI to generate the voice of a family member of, say, Ron Moorhead, whether it be your son, and generate a call that is completely scripted by them in your son's voice to say, "Dad, I'm in trouble. I need help. I need you to give me your credit card number so that I can, you know, pay for this ticket, or, you know, keep me from going to jail," or something like that. And you're going to be firmly in the belief that you're speaking with your son. It's an AI generated voice, and you're going to respond to it accordingly by saying, "Yeah, okay, here, I'm going to help you out. I'll give you the credit card number and you can, you know, pay for it with that." And it's a total scam. It's just, and this is so new that they haven't even broken through the first layer of what they're going to be able to do with this stuff.
Right. That's why I say it's a wolf in sheep's clothing, because everybody in the world is going to be dependent on it. And it's what even the Bible talks about, you know, how it's going to be deceptive. And everybody's going to want it. Everybody's going to need it. Everybody's going to, we're being dumbed down with everything we're doing, you know, just the way it is. We used to depend on our gardens to eat. Now we have to go to the grocery store and choose between pesticides or not.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this new generation that's coming up too has got no idea how it used to be 100 years ago when people had to grow their own food. Now, you know, everything was different, and things are so different now.
Hell, these generations now don't know what it was like 40 years ago.
No, they expect entitlements on everything they do to turn around. And it's too bad, because it's just the way the culture's, it's the way the negative is leading us into. I think it's all planned too. But that's just my conspiracy. I'm not supposed to be a conspiracy theorist. I'm not.
It forces a person to kind of categorize themselves as that. But I firmly think that there is a concerted effort that's going on, whether it's by the Illuminati, or whether it's by the couple of few incredibly beyond wealthy families that we've never even heard of. Whoever's calling the shots, everything seems to be designed to keep us looking down at that little shiny piece of glass in our hand, and instead of, you know, looking up or looking and going engaging with Mother Earth and hanging out in the woods and the forest and doing things that keep you grounded, it sure seems like they're trying everything in their power to
keep us under control.
Keep us under control, and to distract us from everything that's going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Those who want to understand it needs to think about it, because, my gosh, it's just becoming too common for everybody just to accept it, and that's what's happening. And I'm not accepting it. I don't trust the government one bit. I just don't. I don't believe what they say. I don't like to watch the news because I can't trust it. Just don't know what to believe anymore, other than just listen to your heart, because the source of everything comes into your pineal gland, and relates right down to your heart and just don't let your conditioned brain talk you out of it. What your heart is telling you is what should be done. In my opinion. I keep saying
that. I think that's a great way to end this.
It's called a gut feeling.
Yep. Yeah. And that I preach that to my listeners. It's like remain open-minded.
Absolutely.
And use your gut. Man, if it doesn't feel right, it's probably not.
It's like a parachute, Eric. It only works if it opens. When you're green, you grow, and when you're ripe, you rot. So let's all just stay green and try to learn more and talk more often about this stuff, and maybe we'll affect some people out there. I didn't say
I hope so.
I didn't say infect, I said affect.
Affect, yeah. I agree with you. Ron, tell everybody the name of your website again and let everybody know where they can get your books, your CDs,
all this. Sure. It's all on my website, Ron Moorhead, one word, Ron Moorhead, MoreHead.com. And I got my products are there and my stories there and stuff. And you can download all these books, or you can get the paperback, whichever one you want. And the CDs are only downloadable right now unless you find them in a store somewhere, where some stores have them, but I stopped shipping them myself because it's too much to do.
With the advent of the digital files, it's much, much easier, and you don't have to wait for it to come in the mail. You can just download it straight from the website.
It's Kindle. You can get it on Kindle and read it on the airplane or wherever.
Well, for those who are interested, I cannot stress enough the level of intelligence that this man's books will introduce you to. It's mind-opening, and he goes about it in a way that is easy to digest. Explanations of quantum physics and quantum entanglement and all that, he has a very unique way of being able to talk about those things and make it easy for the layperson to understand.
Well, the good part too, Eric, is it's based on science, quantum science, which is recognized around the world. And it's not some woo-woo something out there. It's real. And if I can just understand that, I really want that in my life now to affect somebody, you know, if it's right, and I think it is. So anyway, thank you again for having me on. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, sir. It really has. I've enjoyed this. I've enjoyed each one of our interactions. You're a great guy.
Thank you so much. Okay. You take care.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.